When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the Bottom Line Podcast on the Blood Red channel, courtesy of the Liverpool Echo, the best place to be to get the latest on all things financial at Liverpool FC. Joining me, Patrick Smith, is of course our in-house football finance expert, Dave Powell. How's things, Dave?
Very well, thanks, Pat. Yeah, expert might be a stretch.
No, good stuff. I mean, there's plenty to talk about since the last time we did one of these. We were talking off air, I think it's back in December when the FSG sale news was announced and was all kicking off. It's the last time we actually did one of these podcasts. So we'll bring you the latest on FSG later on in the show, listeners. But Dave, I mean, we've got to start with Manchester City's financial breaches, haven't we? It could be a huge moment in the history of football finance. So what do you make of it all?
We've known this investigation has been going on for some time. I mean, the UEFA investigation ended with charges being brought against City and a 2-year ban from the Champions League, which was overturned, I think, in the June or July of 2020 by the Court of Arbitration for Sport. The argument on that front was it was time barred. So some of the offences which were alleged to have taken place happened long before, so the window of opportunity to punish against those had gone. But this is altogether different. This is 4 years worth of investigatory work here. They would have used forensic accountants and all sorts to go through this, submissions from the clubs, etc. And it is seismic, really. And you know, I don't think any of us imagined that. We've known the investigation has been bubbling along in the background for so long. But I think there was a feeling that it might be a bit toothless, a slap on the wrist and away you go. But the actual severity of the charges and the sheer volume of them as well, I mean, there's 105 separate charges, I think, which have been brought against City by the Premier League, relating from everything from the remuneration of managers and players to sponsorship deals to the kind of potential obfuscation when it came to the investigation itself. So there's a lot to digest. It's important to say that this is going to go on for a long time. When I say a long time, years is probably before this reaches its terminus and we find out exactly what the punishment will be. But it is seismic in terms of the fact the Premier League have never gone this far. And it will be determined what happens by an independent commission. These offences for the Premier League and their rule book aren't time barred, so they'll be able to, it holds water. So, but I just think there is so much to digest. I mean, this only just landed yesterday, and obviously the current inclination is to jump on this and think what will happen in the immediate future. Nothing's going to happen for a long, long time. I don't think this is going to be something which is involves the very best lawyers money can buy and is played out over probably years in a courtroom before we get to anywhere. So, but nevertheless, pretty damning stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned there that it could take years. Now, a lot of listeners and, you know, myself included, are quite confused about what happens next. So what is the process? I mean, it's been referred to the Independent Commission. So, you know, how long will that take and what is the actual process of what happens next?
Still slightly unclear. I mean, the commission will be independently appointed, so they will sit and they will consider all the charges brought against them and submissions from Manchester City, and then eventually this will be determined. But along the way, there'll be so much kind of legal jargon and attempts to obfuscate and attempts to shoot down various aspects of it, which will just drag the whole thing out for far longer than there probably need to be. But ultimately, I mean, there is so many charges on there, but Manchester City have a right to a defence on all this. So and there's so much at stake as well. It's kind of unprecedented because it is a move which the Premier League make, which has potential to really impact the brand itself. I mean, it came out a day before we were supposed to have the government white paper on kind of football reform. That's been postponed. But it kind of lends itself to the Premier League. Premier League have been against that, kind of having an independent regulator in football. So maybe them showing that they feel they have some teeth in this investigation was worth pursuing plays into that a bit. I don't know, but it will be a commission will be independently appointed, a panel of experts, and then all the information will be gone through again as they determine whether or not these charges are upheld or whether there are elements of them which are thrown out, which kind of lesser the severity of the potential punishments. And the punishments for this are kind of as drastic as could be if it went all the way. I mean, I'm not a legal expert, I'm not or anything like that, so I don't want to say too much that beyond my kind of field of expertise or my wheelhouse, but there will be elements of it which I'm sure Manchester City are confident of getting overturned, but the amount of this, like I said before, the sheer volume of charges related, and the fact that this is a 4-year investigation and not kind of a brief flash in the pan where they've just tried to appease people questioning the validity of Manchester City's revenues over the recent years means that it will be something which will carry a lot of weight. It's going to be absolutely fascinating to see what happens, but again, I stress it's not going to be anything which happens in the short term. I don't think they'll be rewriting the history books before the end of the season or anything like that. So I just think it's one of those things which will take an awful long time. It's kind of unprecedented as well. So it's something which we're just going to have to wait and see how it pans out.
I mean, yeah, that's the next part I was going to make. You sort of touched on it with the punishments because it is entirely unprecedented. As you said, we've never been in a situation like this before. Now, we spoke about this on the Blood Red podcast yesterday, and obviously we are all speculating about what might happen. I mean, you know, what do you think the severest punishment can be, and what do you think the most likely punishment would be? I know, again, we are speculating, and these are accusations at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, and that's just them. And I can't really say what I think it would be because I probably don't know enough about the specifics around the charge. What we know is that the financial issue around sponsorships relates to claims that the Abu Dhabi-based City Football Group were paying sponsorship under the guise of, in terms of deals for kind of Etihad Airways and Etisalat, the telecommunications company, and they were enhancing those deals in terms of the money was coming from CFG. But and then the manager remuneration issue surrounds Roberto Mancini's time, I believe, at the club, whereby he was being paid kind of another salary, even more than his base salary at Manchester City was, by a consultancy firm he owned, which then went through another firm which was owned by Sheikh Mansour. And basically, he was being paid, or alleged to have been paid, it's about 1.6 or 7 million pounds a year for doing kind of 4 days coaching at Al Jazeera FC in Abu Dhabi. So there is, you know, these are all allegations. The severity in the Premier League rulebook is quite clear that they are able to dish out whatever punishment they see fit. That includes relegation, that includes the stripping of titles, that includes all that. But also it can be financial punishment. But ultimately, I think the issue for them is, given the fact that money is always deemed to be no object and not a suitable deterrent for this type of thing, would a simple fine be enough to go the distance? When they went the UEFA punishment, or the charges were brought against UEFA, which went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, overturned, I think the eventual fine was something like 9 million they paid for that, and they were allowed back into European competition because it was overturned based on the lack of evidence, I think. So So this is all new. I do think that the Premier League, while they will want to show teeth and that they have bite and to ward off people from engaging in this type of practice moving forward, I do think that they will go beyond just simple financial punishments. However, they will be mindful of the fact that Manchester City are a key part of their global brand. They're not the biggest part. That remains Manchester United and Liverpool are the two teams which have the most global pull. The Premier League is a brand, but they are an important part of the Premier League's brand, and doing anything which removes them from that picture would damage the brand. So I don't see that playing out, but I could be wrong. But I do think that they'll try and find, strike some kind of balance, whether it's competitive sanctions ultimately are the only thing which will truly hurt Manchester City. And again, we stress that these are just allegations. I mean, this is an investigation of 4 years, yes, but they are charged with brought by the Premier League, but they're yet to be upheld by a commission independently. So for the time being, I think it's wise that kind of we keep powder dry, etc., and see how this plays out and allow it to play out in the fashion that it should. But there will be punishments coming Manchester City's way in some way, shape or form. That depends on the severity, depends on just how many are upheld by a commission.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I think the takeaway from that as well is that obviously Man City overturned the UEFA investigation. I think the Premier League would have been very careful to get sufficient evidence on all these claims of the breaches City have. You know, they're going to be stocked up and ready to go on this because they know City have probably some of the best lawyers in the world, not just in football. I mean, I'd like to touch on the sponsorship, as you mentioned there. I mean, obviously this is all unproven, it's accusations, we have to be careful what we say. But to me, it just smells a bit dodgy. We recently had the Deloitte Football League list, didn't we, then, which names the clubs with the highest revenue. I think it was over 2021, 22, correct me if I'm wrong. But we saw Liverpool climb from 7th place to 4th in terms of revenue. But a City have topped that list. Now, they've topped it over, you know, European and Spanish champions, Real Madrid. It just seems a bit dodgy to me, Dave, doesn't it?
So I'm always loath to kind of go in too deeply on stuff like that. I mean, City have been, they will know this investigation has taken place, and they've been well aware of it for a good long time. So I imagine their house has been put in order, if it wasn't in order already, since they're moving forward. However, they have been able to lean on kind of the simpatico relationships that exist in kind of the Gulf region. They have, but all this is available to, you know, to other clubs to tap into. But ultimately, I suppose it is a bit more of a, maybe it's a closed shop in terms of just where you can, you know, the most recent ones for City were official kind of hotel partner, etc. Which, you know, all these things bring in large amounts of money. But City were able to spend in the beginning to kind of close the gap in a way that no one has been able to do since, because it was pre-financial fair play regulations. Once they came in, City had already established success, and they were able to lean on the, I mean, they've had Champions League qualification and successive years. Off the top of my head, I don't think they've missed one in the past decade, have they? But
I think so, no.
No, so that is, you know, and all that, they have been fantastic at leveraging their position in kind of the MENA region into valuable deals, which kind of have set the benchmark. And I suppose they say they're able to do that because they are the Premier League's most successful team over the past decade or so. We can all make the arguments about whether or not they're the biggest team, because, you know, the fan base globally would suggest not. But in terms of success on the pitch, they're able to leverage that. And they have done, and they've done it kind of accretively over time. But I do think that there's been more than a little frustration at the likes of Liverpool in recent years that despite their own success and their own kind of, they are like a behemoth of global sport, Liverpool, that they've been unable to match kind of Manchester City blow for blow when it comes to revenues. But a lot, but some of that also relates to the fact that there were periods in time when Manchester City's, despite adding to the wage bill was coming down while revenues went up. So, and all that forms part of the investigation. But I'd be loath to say it's anything dodgy. I just think it's they have been masters in recent times of leveraging their relationship with the simpatico businesses that exist around where they are based, but also they've been smart about how they conduct their affairs in recent times. This is all historical, and the charges relate to up to 2017-18 with the financial side of things. The ones from beyond that are largely related to lack of cooperation, it's claimed, and things like that around investigations. So, yeah, I think we're just wise to see how this plays out before we may be saying anything too much. But ultimately, we're going to get to the point where we will know definitively, I imagine, in the next year to what, if anything, has been the case and how they have managed to kind of reach those levels and keep everyone else at arm's length. You know, it will all come out in the wash.
Yeah, it certainly will. And just to round off then on the City talk, of course, this is a Liverpool podcast. We look for Liverpool angle, and there's a huge Liverpool angle to all this. I mean, the major one is missing out on the titles that they could have won during that period. I mean, particularly 2013-14 season. I mean, now, Dave, what, just answer this, because obviously a lot of fans are upset, a lot of the players are upset and annoyed, and there's words being thrown around that we don't want to use, such as, you know, cheating and robbed, because we don't know yet. They are just accusations at the moment. We can't say that. I mean, there's so many clubs that, you know, could have potentially have missed out on European places. I mean, winning cup finals, title winning money, top four money. There's a huge amount that City could have potentially taken from these other clubs if the accusations are true.
There is that, again, on top of the fact that this will take many years, those kind of arguments would be this kind of difficult to prove, because there is you have to look for comparisons through other sports. So Lance Armstrong, for instance, when he was stripped of all his Tour de France titles, there was no winner declared in any of those years. And I imagine if that's to be the case, I'm not convinced they will be stripped of Premier League titles. I don't know the full, it's impossible for me to say that really, but I just think that for the Premier League as a brand, it would not look good. But I don't think there would be. I don't think you can retrospectively award the winners, because ultimately you didn't win. You know, it's you'd be trying to fathom to what degree certain players made an impact, and the whole formula of how, you know, of how the players that they signed with money that maybe that they declared, which wasn't truly honest, etc. So it's very difficult when you open that kind of worms, and that would be a legal case for not just kind of Liverpool or United, it would be for every other team that has a knock-on effect, you know. So and you would have teams who were potentially got relegated and claimed no points from Manchester City during that period, maybe claiming that, well, those games null and void, you know. So I think you open up a can of worms. I think there'll be a cutoff point around that, which is why I think that if they do make a decision, it will be a kind of a full hard stop around. There will be only a certain amount that you can really glean from this. There'll be lessons learned from it, but I'm not too sure whether there'll be much financial recourse for football clubs. But again, it's kind of unprecedented. The Premier League will know the potential hornet's nest that they've been poking with this, and they must be confident in their ability to get these charges upheld, because they will otherwise it would have been a giant waste of time and damaging to the brand for no real reason.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only other example I can think of is in rugby union when Saracens broke the salary cap for those years, and you know, their titles weren't stripped, I don't think, were they? So, you know,
no,
who knows what's going to happen? Yeah,
yeah, it's one of those. It's difficult to retrospectively go back and kind of alter the course of time, and through and trying to find out exactly how, because ultimately, I mean, Manchester City was still competing. They still had, you know, there was still an element of the squad there was put together through
probably entirely unaware of what's happening as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of, you have to weigh up kind of this, and I think to do that would potentially open up a real problem for not just Premier League but for the leagues moving forward. So I think, you know, but ultimately we're going to know in time. It's impossible to call.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
As you said, it's going to be a long, drawn-out process. It could take years to reach an outcome. But if we do get any news on it, everyone, be sure to keep across the Blood Red channel and Liverpool Echo site so you don't miss any of Dave's pieces on it. But we'll leave Manchester City talk and financial breaches there. It's time to talk FSG. Dave, it's been relatively quiet on the sale front recently, hasn't it? But what's the latest on the situation?
Nothing has materially changed since the start of November, really. And that is, as of yesterday, I spoke to some people in the US who were trust and who were well placed and with knowledge of the situation. I don't think, I mean, these things aren't quick, and there is a very different, and I said this previously, there's a very different tone to what FSG are trying to do and what kind of maybe Manchester United are trying to do. I mean, Manchester United engaged the Rain Group, who, of course, looked after the Chelsea sale last year. They will already have a dossier of potential buyers, bidders who are on the market for football teams who lost out on Chelsea but may see the value in an asset like Manchester United. They also have experience in an expedited sale because that took, you know, that was completed in super quick time. Those kind of deals don't usually happen at that speed, but it was done because Roman Abramovich's assets were frozen and the club was running out of money and time. But now, this has always been a case of, and I know I've been shut down regularly on Twitter for suggesting the fact, but there is the preference is a minority sale because I understand that there are maybe one or two partners who maybe wouldn't be averse to the idea of selling their shareholding in FSG. Some of them may have held it for a particularly long period of time, and their initial investment has grown. But all it takes is one, two, three, four investors to say, yeah, okay, I might be interested. And what that does then, it frees up potentially 10 or 15% of a business. And that, when that business is valued at over $4 billion, it is a sizable chunk of capital you could realize by, you know, recapitalizing the business by bringing in new shareholders. So that is something which is been in the back of FSG's mind. They have plans for an NBA franchise in the future. That's not happening anytime soon because there is still plenty of hurdles still to clear with the NBA. They've not even decided whether they're expanding the league to 32 teams. They haven't even decided the cities. And the NFL is off limits to them because they are part owned by private equity firms and institutional investment, which is banned in the NFL. So there is no super quick need for them to realize a load of cash. They do need probably an injection of capital to, I mean, look, a lot of this is down, you know, we focus on the transfer element of it. Liverpool can absorb amortized costs in their balance sheet for big transfers this summer. They can, you know, because they earn strong revenues. And even without the Champions League, I mean, they would need to invest in time for next season so they can push to get back in the Champions League. They can't, you know, you can't stop investing in the team and just hope that it comes good again, because ultimately a lot of the value in Liverpool, and FSG know this, is the fact that they have been successful. They can't just trade on the name of being Liverpool, and they know this. They're smart people. So they will have to reinvest in a way maybe that they haven't done previously, because there isn't really the kind of saleable assets that exist at present that there have been, but they can probably use some kind of fresh capital to meet the initial cost payments of these transfers, for cash flow purposes, because the transfers themselves, I mean, while they're accounted for in the books through amortized payments, amortized charges over the life of a contract, they still have to be paid, you know. You don't really see that. That doesn't come off, you know, you don't see that disappear from the books anywhere. So there is that, but I don't think that there's been a lot of talk about the Middle East, Qatar in particular. I'm sure there will be people who are interested from over there looking at Liverpool as an option. They're a massive football club. But from what I'm told, what I've been told repeatedly by people who would know, nobody has shown their hand, nobody has come to the table, nobody has said, here's X amount of money for the football club. There's been no high-level discussion held as yet. If anything, the FSG would kind of fight in a few fires in Boston in December. So NFC sale focus hasn't really been the top of their agenda. It's something which they're exploring. Redbird have been kind of, there's a notion kicking around that they are they're interested in increasing their stake in FSG. From what I'm told, that's a no right now. They've got Milan project on the go. They've got Toulouse as well, and they've got other projects that they're working on, and they've got a £1 billion sports fund which has just been created with a guy called Jeff Zucker, but I don't think that's going to have any impact on any further FSG investment, although I do believe that they may do more with FSG in the future, but it's certainly not related to the LFC investment / sale search.
Yeah, I mean, the point you made before then is all about, you know, with closer to a, or not closer, it's looking more likely there'll be a part sale, not a full sale. Now, I mean, there's always been a part of the fan base that's anti-FSG, and, you know, to be a voice for our comment section, a lot of comments we receive, I mean, it seems so multiplied now with numerous people calling for FSG out. I mean, they clearly want a full sale of the club. Do you think there's any possibility if it do go through with a full sale, or is that sort of out of the question now?
If someone comes in with an offer that's big enough for everyone to be happy. It's not just, I mean, John Henry is the principal owner, but there is not just John Henry's kind of interests he would have to consider. There are interests of the likes of Redbird, who invested heavily into an asset, which Liverpool was a major part, who look after the interests of numerous other investors, same for Arcto Sports Partners. They look after their investors' interests. So I imagine there'll be a few in kind of minority partners and significant minority partners that would think, well, we've not had the opportunity to grow this investment as much as we wanted yet. Well, you know, John Henry would be the man with the say. I do think he is a pragmatist, and he knows that he has to work with these people, even if he sells Liverpool. You know, they're not just investors in Liverpool, they're investors in FSG. So he has to have a happy ship in order to further grow the empire. I think if a major offer comes in and it satisfies that need, then yeah, why not? But it's the moment, nothing's happened, not to say it won't happen. But I think the idea is, look, a lot of these things, there's always been an element of FSG, and it's a valid criticism that they haven't invested to the levels of their rivals, which they haven't. But there was always a fairly clear model of what they did. The problem is now that model's being challenged by the fact that everyone else has spent more, and the ability for them to turn over players and gain value that way has been diminished, and they've probably missed two or three transfer windows to allow them to rebuild, which means they face an expensive rebuild. But things are always amplified as well when things are bad on the pitch, and obviously it's bad on the pitch at the moment, and a not insignificant amount of that, a reason for that is because the team probably has missed an opportunity to strengthen and address some of those issues. But you know, I don't think that will go away. I think there's probably an element of the fan base now that is just will be unhappy with that model of ownership moving forward. And you know, their ire would be understandable, I imagine. So I think, though, it all depends on what happens in the summer. If they show an appetite to spend in the summer, maybe that shows that there was a plan all along, even if it was delivered too late for this season. But it would be hard to make a case for them to still be competitive owners if they weren't to make any significant investment this summer, because that would, you know, it's quite obvious that this is a Liverpool team in dire need of investment in key areas that will be expensive, and it needs the bill footing. So, you know, the summer will be very, very telling.
Yeah. I mean, it is frustrating for fans because, you know, granted, when things are bad on the pitch, it's always worse and people are always going to be more critical. But they have had opportunities to invest and they haven't as of such. I mean, just to round this off then, Dave, you know, you've hinted that, I mean, it's no secret, Liverpool do need a huge rebuild. Some of those numerous players that we're expecting to leave, and there's numerous players needed. I mean, what do you think the budget could be for Liverpool in the summer? You look at Chelsea spending under Todd Boehly. I mean, it's a bit crazy, if we're being totally honest. I mean, ridiculous numbers they're spending in long-term deals spread over time. Do you think that's a possible avenue Liverpool could go down of, you know, say, Jude Bellingham, spreading the cost of him over time, or will they have the budget, do you think, to just sort of...
No. I think UEFA are... There's already been complaints made to UEFA around what Chelsea are doing. Largely, it's kind of Americanized nature of sports contracts, long contracts, which FSG would be well used to. They signed an 11-year deal with their star player only last month. I think UEFA are closing that particular avenue for clubs to spread, you know, kind of the transfer fee through amortized charges over a longer period of time. I think that particular loophole is going to close. It's hard to say what they can spend. They'll have to spend, if they want Jude Bellingham, Enzo Fernandez has already kind of set the bar for young midfielders from European leagues now, and Jude Bellingham's got more experience than Enzo Fernandez. I know Enzo Fernandez is a World Cup winner, but he still played limited games in the sixth biggest European league. So, and he's, you know, he's older. So Bellingham, it will be massively expensive. That's not to say they can't go in for him, but there will have to be an element of it's hard to imagine that this rebuild doesn't cost them any less than 200 million this summer, and because they'll need they'll need Bellingham plus one or two other players, and the market now for players has increased further. Other Premier League clubs in particular, their feet are held to the fire when it comes to transfer values. Liverpool were able to do it smartly with Luis Diaz because there was a window of opportunity there whereby Porto needed the cash to meet debt obligations, which were occurring the following week at the end of January in 2022. It was 2022, but yeah, I've lost track of the year. And so they were able to make, they said, well, we will pay you this X amount of money, you need to settle those immediate debts now. And that meant that they were able to drag down the price of Diaz in January. The ability to negotiate really good deals in the Portuguese market's been made really difficult by the Fernandez transfer. And also, clubs know the value of their players now. Chelsea have kind of come in and skewed the market somewhat. It's a risky strategy from them because you are banking on that group of players they put together really kind of hitting it off and becoming kind of a really great team. They may still, but that is a process which takes time. Liverpool will need to spend heavier than FSG have probably spent before this coming summer. And if they're willing to do that, who knows, maybe they get another chance to kind of prove themselves were the owners, but I imagine for some the ship has sailed on that front. But regardless, they need to spend if only to protect the value of their asset moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a make or break summer for FSG, doesn't it? They need to spend, everyone knows it, and hopefully, you know, they've been hesitant in the previous transfer window, so they know they're going to spend big this summer and bring in the guns like Jude Bellingham, hopefully. Well, that just about wraps us up there for today though. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening and watching along. Be sure to subscribe to Blood Red on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts from so you don't miss any of our daily podcasts and video content. And of course, be sure to check out the Liverpool Echo site and social media channels for the latest Liverpool news, including any updates on a potential FSG sale whenever we have them. But for now, thank you so much for joining me, Patrick Smith, and Dave Powell on the Bottom Line podcast. Catch you again soon.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.